Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Abby Lundberg to the broadcast. Abby is a business technology analyst, advisor, and professional speaker with over 20 years' experience reporting and commenting on the use of technology in business. Many of our listeners will no doubt know Abby from her time leading the award-winning CIO magazine as editor-in-chief from 1995 through 2008. Under her stewardship, CIO became the publication of record for chief information officers and all executives interested in the use of information technology for business value and competitive advantage. As president of Lundberg Media, Abby helps CIOs and their senior teams translate complex issues into clear messages to speed organizational buy-in and delivery of results. In addition to her work with IT leaders, Abby provides businesses and nonprofits with media and communication services, including writing, editing, presentations, research, public speaking, online strategy development, and group facilitation. Abby's a member of the American Society of Magazine Editors, American Business Media, and the American Society of Business Publications Editors. Prior to joining CIO, Abby worked as an editor for CBS Magazines and King Features Syndicate in New York. Abby has a Bachelor of Arts degree in English Literature from Trinity College. I recently caught up with Abby in the Boston area, and our conversation focused on World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we talked about the need for CIOs to create tighter alignment with the businesses that they serve in order to innovate on their behalf, as well as the need for IT executives to communicate more effectively with all of their partners, in addition to some other topics. Abby Lundberg, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. Abby, many of our listeners will certainly know you as from your time as the editor-in-chief of CIO Magazine. I was interested, actually, in preparing for this interview and finding out that rather than having your education background in technology, you were actually an English literature major way back when. And not surprised, certainly having had the pleasure of reading your many columns, your many sets of analysis as part of the writings for CIO. But I wonder, how did you find your way into technology writing?
Well, it's interesting because, first of all, I was at CIO for quite a while. I was there for over 21 years. So putting in context how I got there, I really knew nothing about business or technology when I first arrived at CIO Magazine. I was, as you said, a literature major. I had worked for King Features Syndicate in New York and also CBS Magazines, really in consumer media. So when I came to CIO, I was intrigued by the space, knew nothing about it, and was fortunate to be able to get, an entry-level position as the copy editor there and really learn on the job. And what was a surprise for me was I became a journalist because I had a lot of varied interests. And I always thought that, well, journalism was a fundamental skill set that you could take from discipline to discipline. So I could come into the business technology space and work as a journalist in that for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And then, once I'd sort of learned everything there was to learn, I could move on into a different space and take my fundamental journalism skills with me. The reason I ended up at CIO for 21 years was things just kept changing. I mean, the whole business technology space is so dynamic, and it has been so high stakes that every 4 or 5 years, when I maybe would start to get a little bored, something dramatic would change. First it was the whole decentralization trend in the late 80s, early 90s, and then there was the internet in the mid 90s, and then the whole dot-com boom and bust and Y2K, and it just has been a never-endingly interesting field to cover.
That's great, and it occurs to me that magazines and especially the online presence is very well suited to a space that where the trends do in fact move so quickly, as opposed to traditional book writing where oftentimes books about technology can become pretty stale fairly quickly. The pace of change does require a lot of fast analysis, and I suppose being operating in the perch that you had at CIO, you were quite well suited for that.
And at the same time, what was great about being at CIO Magazine, where we were basically a monthly magazine, we could follow things as they were changing on the spot, but we also had the time and space to really do analysis and write from the point of view of what does this mean for you to our readers as CIOs. And that was a really important part of what we did.
That's great. Well, tell us what you've been up to since you left CIO.
I've been gone a little over a year now, and I've basically the work I've been doing falls into basically three different areas. On the one point, I've been consulting to CIOs and their senior teams around sort of strategic communications programs. This typically would be something, CIOs have a lot of critical stakeholders that they have to interact with. And each of those audiences has different needs, different perspectives, different levels of knowledge about what IT can and is doing. So it's a tough space to communicate ineffectively when, on the one hand, technology is such a sophisticated discipline with a lot of a lot of technical detail involved in it, and yet you're communicating to stakeholders who may know very little about the technology itself, trying to tell them what it can do for them, where the value is, what it's going to take to get there, and to do that all in a way that is engaging, is it's a pretty daunting task. So that's the first third of what I've been doing. The second piece is I've been doing a lot of more traditionally what I've been doing over the past 20 years. I've been doing some research, writing, and public speaking on business technology, primarily for CIO audiences. So I've been working on some research and writing projects with, I did a project with the Accenture Center for High Performance and just finished a project with Harvard Business Review Analytic Services around how companies are getting value out of information as they try to get back into growth mode following, as we come out of the recession. So I've been really lucky to work on some very interesting projects in that space. And then also, as I mentioned, doing some public speaking to CIO audiences. And then the third piece, I've been also working some with the vendor community to help them better understand the needs and directions of CIOs.
Excellent, and obviously three different areas that suit your skills quite well. It's interesting as I hear you talk about those, as well as coupling that with your earlier answer about the way in which you found your way into CIO writing, being someone who was a good writer to start with, a good communicator to start with, and then learned about technology. It seems like in many ways you're a great complement to people who come in the opposite direction, know the technology, start from the ground up, and perhaps they were coders, programmers, and so forth, and have become leadership, but maybe perhaps aren't as comfortable with the communications aspect of all that they've done.
Right. I think there's sort of a translating need there that I think I can help with.
Makes sense. Makes very good sense. Well, I know, having read some of the research that you've been doing, you've been recently been focusing on the issue of what you call the CIO's dilemma, to balance the conflicting demands as we try to emerge from the economic malaise. Can you elaborate on what constitutes this notion of the CIO's dilemma?
Sure. I think businesses in general are really struggling with this right now. As the economy very slowly starts to pick up, there's certainly high demand for growth, but the demand is for profitable growth. And given how slow the recovery is proving to be, I mean, the IMF forecasts world GDP at just 2.5% for 2010, and most of that's coming from emerging markets. US GDP is forecast at less than 1%. So given how slow things are growing, it's a different response from past recoveries where companies would sort of shift from cost cutting reduction mode into investment and growth. So the dilemma is, how do you start to really push on those, you know, innovation, growth, new capabilities? How do you push on those things while still having to continue to cut costs and reduce operating complexities and become more efficient at the same time? So it's really, there's this sort of right brain, left brain thing going on that I think is going to be a big challenge for many organizations to do. In the CIO space, it really comes down to, you know, there's a whole list of things. On the one hand, you're having to cut costs while you're building new capabilities. You're having to make your business more efficient, but at the same time, be more responsive to business executives, line leaders, having to standardize your technology platforms to get that efficiency, but at the same time, customizing solutions given specific needs in the marketplace. The list goes on and on and on for CIOs. So it's a pretty challenging time.
As you compare this recession to past ones, do you feel as though there's a different response from the business side of the house of major corporations towards CIOs? There's always this traditional, or has long been, I should say, a traditional tendency to view the CIO as a scapegoat, if perhaps in some case for good reasons, but in other cases, perhaps it's because it's one of those parts of the corporation, depending upon what the organization does, that's less accessible. It operates in a different way. It uses a different language and so forth. Do you feel that businesses are yet getting to the point where the CIO tends to be less the scapegoat during downturns?
You know, Peter, I think it's so situational. I was at a conference this past week talking to a lot of CIOs, and the range is quite remarkable. You know, there are probably a lot more companies now who do value IT's contribution and do turn to IT to say, you know, we need to be more efficient. IT, you can help us be more efficient, and that's a natural response. But there's still a lot of companies that just look at IT as a drag. You know, you're a cost center, you do things too slowly, you're just getting in our way. And that's, that's a big challenge for the men and women who are in those positions trying to make those businesses run more effectively.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about innovation. I know that that's a topic that is on a lot of people's minds, and especially as people contemplate this during times that are a little bit tougher, where budgets are being cut. How do you see organizations or IT leaders more specifically, their role in innovation, as well as what advice do you offer them in how best to approach innovation during these tough times where, in fact, budgets may be contracting?
Right. I mean, I think innovation, obviously, there's a need to innovate in all different aspects of the business. So you can innovate around efficiency. You can innovate around new products. And so what CIOs have to figure out is, what percentage of their time are they putting in which spaces given the current realities of their business? You know, business that has just a horrible mess of mishmash systems for whatever reason, maybe for very good reasons. They went through a lot of mergers and acquisitions over the past 10 years and just never had the time to sort of rationalize that. There can be innovation around how do you design IT infrastructure to prepare our company to compete most effectively over the next 3 to 5 years. But there's also a high need to innovate on the edge around customer issues. So it's really situational on where the company is at the time, what the capability is of the IT organization, and what the needs are of the business moving forward.
That's a great point. So that last point, I think, is especially intriguing, the IT leader's ability to innovate around the customer. And as you, with your answer a moment ago, quite appropriately, that the business's reaction to the CIO as to whether or not he or she is to blame during downturns, or at least somebody who's easily treated as a scapegoat, I suppose also it's situational as to whether or not the business will allow IT to become involved with customers, to give them access to them, to allow them to do the thinking about how IT can impact what the business does as it relates to its customers.
Absolutely. CIO Magazine does a survey every year called the State of the CIO, and we've been asking a list of what are your top priorities as CIO, strategic priorities. What are the things that you need to focus on? And customers have been on the list for years, but it's only been named in the top set by single digit percentages of respondents to the survey. This year, it pretty much doubled. I mean, whereas last year, people, maybe 9% said that they should be focusing on customers to, I think there are a couple of different questions around customers, one around customer service and responsiveness and loyalty, and another around, getting insight from customers. But it went from the single digits into the double digits, almost doubling for the first time in years. I mean, in the past, it's gone up a percentage point or two, but that took a big jump this year. And in the project that I just finished working on, for the Harvard Business Review Analytic Services Group, it was a survey that Symantec sponsored. We asked about priorities. So this was a survey of not just IT executives, but executives across the board. It was a Harvard Business Review subscriber base. So it was very global. It was very well represented in terms of industry, company size, functional area. And 81% of participants said that retaining customers was the most important priority for them to start growing again. And then acquiring new customers, 74% said that. And yet, very few companies viewed themselves as being well positioned to leverage their information assets to do those things, acquire new customers, retain customers, serve customers better. There was a real big gap between where they knew they needed to be and where they felt they were right now.
Which I suppose suggests an opportunity then for the IT leaders in those businesses to fill that gap. I guess it depends upon the skills and ambition and thoughtfulness of those IT leaders as to whether or not they can help fill that gap, that need that's been identified.
Right. And central to that is the focusing on the information, not on the technology.
That's a great point. It's a theme that I'm happy to hear you talk about. I think that we've certainly seen that as well, that there's a tendency sometimes and certainly a stereotype among IT departments that the focus is on tools or technologies as opposed to solving the problems themselves, beginning with first principles as opposed to going directly to the solution.
Right.
Well, you certainly are somebody who has thought through a lot of trends and has had reason to speak with CIOs for many, many years since almost the advent of the role. I'm wondering, as you see the progression that CIOs have taken through your history of looking at the role and speaking with leaders in that space, what do you see as the evolving role of the CIO? How do you see that role transforming in the years ahead?
CIOs have a tremendous opportunity, and I think their companies have a tremendous need for them to step up to that opportunity to really, everything about business is becoming digitized. Absolutely every aspect, whether it's products that companies are selling to their customers, how they're creating those products, how they store them and market them and distribute them, all of that is being really changed by information technology. So who other than the CIO should be right at the center of that, deciding what the opportunities are, clearly working collaboratively with all the business executives? This is not something CIOs should ever think about doing in a vacuum, but they should be absolutely right at the center of all of that. And the problem is that in companies where IT is a big mess, there's a lot of just sort of blocking and tackling work that needs to happen first. So the question is, how quickly can CIOs get their companies in good order so that they can then really start contributing to those higher value-adding opportunities?
It's refreshing to hear you say that, Abby, because I think this is another thing that we've seen as well, that there's this desire, understandably, to get to business alignment. But if your infrastructure is on fire, for instance, you're not going to have the credibility then to be asked to the strategy setting table. I think I'm hearing you say that the IT leader needs to make sure that he or she is focusing on getting everything right within of all the things that are in their purview before then extending themselves to capture the opportunities ahead.
Right. Yeah. And I think the other part of it is that, so once you get there, how do you fulfill that role? And I've talked to a number of CIOs who have put it this way, it's really that leading from behind kind of thing, because most functional executives really don't understand technology well enough to take the leadership role, but they have to be somehow in that leadership role if it's a capability or product or an operational attribute that's in their purview. So I love the idea of CIOs leading, but leading from behind, so that they're mentoring, they're encouraging, and they're guiding, but never cutting the functional executives out so that they feel like, hey, this is not my responsibility, because it's got to be a shared responsibility.
Great point. Returning to the point you made earlier, that a lot of what you're doing now with Lundberg Media is focusing on communications. Do you see CIOs evolving to become better communicators? We talked earlier about how there was a stereotype, and sometimes well served, that CIOs tended to be more internally focused, strong technologists, perhaps not so strong in terms of how they've communicated. Do you see this as a pattern that's changing, as perhaps businesses have an appetite for IT leaders who have the same sorts of skill sets as the heads of other divisions?
Absolutely. And clearly the most successful CIOs are brilliant communicators. That's part of how they got to where they are. That's part of how they're able to make happen inside their organizations, the things that they make happen. Again, it's sort of, there's this whole gamut of level of maturity around communication. Whether it's at the CIO level, it was a really another very important point is that it's not just the CIO. It's got to be the CIO's entire senior team. And then even below that, everyone in IT who is interacting with business counterparts, everybody's going to be talking about the challenges, opportunities, and solutions in the same language. And IT, unfortunately, has a very unique and function-specific language that it tends to fall back on if they're not being really cognizant about it.
Very interesting. Just a final question. I can't let you go. As somebody who has, as you pointed out, for so long seen these waves of tremendous trends and interesting things happening in technology. You mentioned earlier, each time you thought you might be getting bored, there was a new wave of innovation and new things that were happening in the technology field that drew you back in. As you look into your own personal crystal ball, what sorts of emerging technologies are particularly exciting you today?
Well, I try not to get excited about emerging technologies because I think there's so much of that energy and momentum in just the marketplace to begin with that I certainly don't need to contribute to it. I think that the cloud computing obviously is the sort of huge wave that's washing over everybody right now. It's not a technology, it's a way of thinking about technology services, and it depends on lots of different technologies. So I think, all of the building blocks that go into enabling something like cloud computing are really important. That, everything from virtualization to, service-oriented architecture to the kinds of web services that are laying on top of that. Those are all really exciting things. The thing that I'm looking at most often right now is what are the technologies that can let an organization really build a strong fundamental core and protect the hell out of it, but then have a lot of agility and speed and responsiveness on the edge. So whether that's an architecture, and I actually think architecture is a really critical thing for everybody to be thinking about right now, thinking about how do we build that infrastructure for the future. But also what have all these new web technologies, what are they enabling? And probably the most exciting example of that that's in practice right now would be Bechtel, which has really rebuilt their entire infrastructure around web-enabled services. And it's just it's taking a very large and what you would think of as a pretty locked down kind of company to be pretty agile and light. So those are the kinds of things that I find exciting. It's not any one technology, but rather a way of designing and taking advantage of a variety of technologies.
Oh, makes sense. Very good answer. Well, great. Abby, thank you so much for taking time with us on the forum on World Class IT. It's so great to mine your experience and also to find out all the exciting things you're doing. Best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to talk with you.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT: Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it will be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure, defined as software, hardware, networks. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will likely become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. And if systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. Now, if the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Chris Davis, our web editor is Christian Dooley, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.